Ferris B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
The Mishnah in Brachos says, Chayev Adam Levorach Al Hara, a man is obligated to make a bracha, to make a blessing on the bad, on bad tidings, Kishem Shemavarach Al Tova, just like he makes a bracha, just like he makes a blessing on good tidings. The Gemara on Samach Amud Beis asks, "Mai chayv levorach al hara?" What does this mean that he's obligated to make a bracha on the bad? Ilema, if you mean kishem shemvarach al tova, hatova meitiv, if you mean he has to make the exact same bracha, the same nusach, the same words, it's not true. On a good tiding, one makes the tova meitiv. One makes the bracha that's appropriate for thanking Hashem for the good. Al ra, on bad tidings, a person makes a dayan ha'emes. So the Gemara says, what? Clearly we're not talking about the nusach, the text of the words. Amarava, Rava says, no. Nitzrucha ala kablui besimcha. What this refers to is not the words that you say, but your attitude when you're saying it, your emotions, your state of mind to accept it besimcha. Meaning when the Mishnah says, a man is obligated to make a blessing on the bad as he does on the good, it means he's obligated with the same joy and the same sense of emotion to make a blessing on bad news as he does on good news. About 2 years ago, my wife had our sixth child, and after I picked the children up from school, I brought them to the hospital to visit their new sibling. And we came home. On the way home, we stopped and bought a cake. We sat down at the kitchen table. We put a zero candle in that cake. And we made our first birthday for our newborn child. At that moment in my life, I believe I felt what I had experienced as the ultimate simcha. Having a first child is an unparalleled experience, but there was something unique about this particular event, and that is that I was sharing it, not just with my wife, but with my children who were already mature enough to understand and relate to the simcha. I already had three teenage children, and there was a certain sense of joy sharing it, their brother, my son, and there was a shlemus, a sense of completion, a sense of joy that I believe, for me personally, was unmatched. Those type of emotions are rare, and when a person experiences that, he's obligated to make a bracha. But if we're reading this Mishnah correctly, the Mishnah is asking a human being to do something that is impossible. That if Rachmana Litzlan, heaven should protect us from this, if a person has to bury a child, he makes a bracha. But the problem with the Mishnah is that the Mishnah says you're obligated in the same joy. And the question is that it seems to be physically impossible. And how could the Mishnah tell me that I'm obligated in that same sense of joy, that same emotional status, when it clearly is not possible to be? And that's the question I'd like to address this evening. What's pshat in this Mishnah? What's pshat in Rava's statement? And agav doing that, I'd like to address a very, very important concept. There is, as you know, a great philosophical question that's constantly raised, constantly dealt with, and that is, why do bad things happen to good people? Now, to me, that question is much less relevant than a much, much more pressing question, and that is, why do bad things happen to me? Philosophy is interesting, and it's quite easy for me to be philosophical and deal with understandings when it's your life, but when it's my life, my pain, my suffering, it's a whole lot more difficult. And this evening, what I'd like to do for a little while is focus on that particular question, why me? Why do bad things happen to me? And I'm not talking about little things. I'm not talking about when you get cut off and you get a blowout and you have to kill half a day or you're stuck in traffic. Those things are often nisyonos, they're tests to just give you more schar or to really allow you to grow. I'm talking about really bad things. Death of a spouse, losing a job, illness, depression. And the question is, why does Hashem allow these things to happen to me? But before we deal with that question, I think there's a very, very important exception that I must make. And that is, many people ask that question incorrectly. I believe that many people blame Hashem, blame God for their problems. And let me explain to you what I mean. If you play in traffic, you will get hurt. You will likely die. The Chovos Levavos spends a lot of time explaining why that's true. He explains that even though it's true that Hashem decrees how long a person should live, how long a person should die, Hashem also gave it within the hands of human being the ability to control his destiny. And there's a thing in the world called cause and effect, and there are consequences. If you are not careful, if you are not guarded in the way you act, if you behave in a reckless manner, you will be injured, you will likely be hurt, and it's not Hashem who's to blame, it's you. The guy's checked into the hospital, he's in the emergency room. Hashem, why me? Why me? Why you? Because you're 100 pounds overweight, you smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day, you haven't exercised since you're 14 years old, and you can't believe God singled you out for a heart attack. It's not Hashem's problem. It's not Hashem's decree. That's your decree. You caused that. You brought it upon yourself. And don't go blaming God for your problem. Now, my friends, this concept is not so simple, and it's not only limited to things like getting sick. Many, many people have a trouble making a living. And you'll hear people, Hashem, why me? I'm a good guy. I'm trying. I can't push. I can't pay my mortgage. I get to the end of the month and my rent is due and I can't pay it. I can't pay my utility bills. Hashem, why are you doing this to me? I'm a good guy. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Why are you doing this to me? Gentlemen, I want to share something with you. There is a very, very well-known Gemara that has apparently a very unknown Rashi on it. The very well-known Gemara states, Mizunosov shel adam ketzuvim lo b'rosh Hashanah. The amount of money that a person is to make that year is set on Rosh Hashanah, and everyone knows that Gemara. Since the time you're in fifth grade, you know how much money I'm to make this year is set. My shtadlis is what I'm supposed to do, but if I'm supposed to make $50,000, $500,000, $5 million, that amount of money is set. And everyone knows that Gemara. But you know what Rashi says on that Gemara? Rashi says a very interesting insight. Hilkach, therefore, al yotzi yitzi meruba. Therefore, a person should not make a very large expenditure. Be careful not to spend too much, says Rashi. Why? Because didn't you read the Gemara? The amount of money you're going to make this year is set. And if you spend it early or you spend too much, you're not getting more. And in our society, Baruch Hashem, we enjoy great wealth, but it seems that we spend a whole lot more than our wealth. And the reason why this society as a whole is racked by credit card debt is because we overspend that which we're given. And it's not Hashem's problem. If you're living above your means and you taka, can't make ends meet, you don't have a complaint against Hashem. And it's something that takes a while to set in and takes a while to understand. And it's something that societally we're lacking, this concept of personal responsibility. That at the end of the day, I am responsible for many, many things, much of my life. Hashem created the world that way. Hashem gave me Bechira. Hashem created the system of cause and effect. And what I do directly affects my life. And what that also means is that if at 25 years old, you're as selfish and creepy as you were when you were 15, don't go blaming Hashem when you get divorced. Don't go tining God, why me? Why'd you arrange that I should meet the wrong person? Why'd it work out that I had to be stuck with this? Why'd you plague me? Don't be so quick to blame Hashem for what may be your problem. And that issue I'm not talking about this evening, because again, that's a whole different issue. And it's not Hashem's deal. That's Adam's responsibility. What I'd like to speak about this evening is when bad things happen to me that are taka not my responsibility. when I'm a good guy who's well educated, worked hard at my career, and for some unknown reason, I lose job after job. And not because I'm lazy and not because I'm irresponsible, but it just somehow works out that way. Or if illness strikes, despite the fact that I try to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Or any of the tragedies, the things that occur to a person, the bad things. And on those, the question is, why me? And there, it's Hashem. And there, the question is valid. And it's that question I'd like to spend a little time on this evening. Why me? Why did Hashem choose me for this? And what's the attitude that I should have dealing with it? So let me begin with what the Chovos Levavos teaches us in Shaar Cheshben HaNefesh. There are basically three reasons why Hashem will bring bad things to a person. The first reason is counterintuitive, and that is that they're not bad, they're for your good. You may not recognize it now, you may not see it that way now, but ultimately, they're for your good. There are many, many examples. The Chovos Levavos brings a famous one. He brings an example. There was a traveler who was a chassid, a very righteous, holy man. And after a long day traveling with his group, he lies down next to a stone wall. They go to sleep there under the protection of this wall. And in the middle of the night, a dog comes and urinates right on this man. And he gets up, he's filthy, and he can't believe what he's been chosen for, the humiliation. And he just gets out and runs to the river to clean himself off. And when he comes back to that spot, he understands that it was for his good, because in that few minutes, the wall collapsed and all the other people were killed. And the truth be told, it doesn't take an awful lot of philosophical depth to see that there are many, many situations that I deem to be for my bad, and 5 years later, I have a very different take on them. How many people do you know who have the attitude, I gotta have 10 kids right away. If I don't have a full brood, then Hashem must hate me. Hashem's angry with me. Lamaisa, you see people who don't have such an easy time. Could wait 5 years, 6 years to have a kid. And it's not until many, many years later that you understand why it is. Because believe me, a child that you waited for 5 years, you treat differently than a child that came right away. I know a couple who had one child, an only child, Nebuch, an only child. But I know that child very well. And I also know that that child is one of the most special individuals I know. Not only is this person a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Baal Midos, a very, very exceptional child. And I believe an awful lot has to do with the fact that he was an only child. And his parents showered him with unbelievable love and attention. And he is a unique individual because of that. And as you see kids grow, you see that not everything that looks like a bracha right away is a bracha. And oftentimes things that look bad are really for your good. You lose a job, you end up in a better job. You lose a job and you have to move to a different city and it turns out to be better for your kids. And it doesn't take an awful lot of time to see many situations that look like they're for the bad and turn for the good. And that category is not so difficult. Category two, second reason why Hashem will bring bad things on people is as a punishment. And a punishment means that it's something that I've done wrong and is coming to me a punishment. And the Chovos Levavos says in Cheshbon number 27 that one of the cheshbonos, one of the thoughts that a Jew should have is that this is for my good. Because if it weren't for my good, Hashem wouldn't bring it to me. And it's for my good because receiving a punishment in this world is quick. And it's easy. It may feel painful, and it may feel like it's a long time, but in a flash of an eye, it's gone. In a flash of an eye, my life is gone, and for eternity, I benefit. The third reason, which is even more difficult for us to relate to, is that sometimes the HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings us bad things as an assayin, as a test. And a test means that I'm judged how I live through it, how I go through it, how I act. And gentlemen, here's the challenge. These are interesting philosophical words. Whether Hashem is bringing that which looks like it's for my bad and it's for my good, or it's a punishment, or it's a test, those are easy words for us to talk about right now. But the problem is when you're living through it, when you don't have a job, when you don't have a kid, when you're having problems with its illness or sickness or tzaras or daigas or worries or all of the manifest amount of problems that we human beings have, how does one actually have this sense that this is for my good? And how does one have that philosophical depth to put it in the right perspective? And I'd like to share with you a chiddush that the Rosh Yeshiva once shared with us that I think helps greatly on putting life and all of these issues in perspective. The Rosh Yeshiva said as follows. In Parshas Mishpatim, there are many onshim mentioned. Many onshim that are directly correlated to the act that are done, punishments fitting the crime. Interestingly enough, there's one that doesn't seem to fit so well. The pasuk says, if you steal a cow, you pay back five times, five cows. If you steal a sheep, you pay back four times, four sheep. Rashi, bothered by the inconsistency, explains it's quite simple. Quoting a Gemara, Rashi says, what happens like this, typically when you steal a cow, you lead the cow out, it's a heavy animal, you lead the cow out by a rope, and you make your escape. When you steal a sheep, it's a small animal, you'll pick it up, put it on your shoulders, and run out. Rashi quotes the Gemara that it's a bezayon to the Adam. It's an embarrassment to the man to put an animal on his shoulders. Hence, he suffered already. And the Torah has rachmanis. He already suffered, he already was punished, he already suffered some of his embarrassment. Therefore, the Torah says he only has to pay back four times, not five like the cow, because he already went through some pain, some hardship. And I remember the Rosh Yeshiva asked the question that doesn't seem to fit what we're discussing. If you can imagine for a minute, a man breaks into someone's barn in the middle of the night, grabs the sheep, puts on his shoulder and runs out. Is he thinking, oh, the embarrassment, oh, I'm so bushed out. He's thinking lamb chops. He's just happy to make his escape. He's happy to get there and cook this and eat dinner. He's not thinking the godless Sa'odom that's being damaged. And the Rosh Yeshiva taught us a tremendous yesod. And that is, he may not be, but the Torah is. And he may not relate to the emotions that are going on within him, but the Torah does. Meaning there may be sensations, feelings that are so suppressed that he doesn't even relate to them, but they're there, and the Torah is sensitive to them. So sensitive that his punishment is different. He suffered. He may not feel it. In his conscious mind, he may not relate to it, but he suffered, and because he suffered, the Torah has rachmanis. And my friends, I believe there's a tremendous lesson to learn from that. Lesson number one is rather obvious. And that is, Hashem knows a lot better than we do what we need. But that one's pretty obvious. There's a more subtle lesson. And that is that not only does Hashem know what I need because Hashem sees the future 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, Hashem feels my emotionality. Hashem understands my psyche. Hashem understands my emotional needs better than I do. And there may be certain pains, certain needs, certain desires that I have that I can no longer even identify. I may never have been attuned to them, but Hashem is. And the ultimate level is something that the Chovos Levavos shares with us. He says very clearly, you must know and understand that Hashem loves you more than you love you. As much as you could be self-absorbed, in a good sense, as much as you should be focused on your good, that is nothing compared to the love and concern that Hashem has for you. And even when you no longer feel the pain, maybe never felt the pain, maybe never understood what you are lacking, Hashem stands there and watches the ganaf and says, oy, ganafel, oy, you're suffering the bush of, oy, I can't make you pay five, just four, because Hashem feels the pain of a ganaf. How much more so does Hashem feel the pain of one who's doing his ratzon, one who's acting appropriately? And this single concept that not only does Hashem know what I need better than I do, but that Hashem loves me more than I do, is one of the great yesodas that a person must have when they approach any challenge in life. Gentlemen, would you like to know what pshat in that Mishnah is? The Miri says it's quite simple. The Miri says, what does it mean a man is obligated to make a blessing on the Ra? Says the Miri, what that means is a person shouldn't kick. He shouldn't complain. When a bad thing happens, he should be Yodel Hashem. He should admit to Hashem, V'yatztik etz dino, and make righteous Hashem's din, V'yiftach b'Hashem, and have trust in Hashem. Why? Because I know that Hashem created this world with love. Hashem created this world with kindliness. Hashem knows what I need better than what I need, know that I need. And Hashem loves me more than I love me. Hence, this event, this bad thing, is for my good. Either it's for my good directly, I may not know it now, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I'll know it. Or maybe it's a punishment, but that's also for my good. And when I leave this earth, I will dance a jig and be very happy. And it's interesting to note, the Marsham Bracha says that if you're worried about punishments, it's not that common. Most situations, most events that befall a person are for his good. When Chazal say that expression, Kol man da'avid rachmana l'tova avid, says the Marsha, you know why you have to always say everything Hashem does is for the good? Because most of the times, most of those bad, horrible things that I hated, I waited, hopefully it wouldn't happen, most of those things are for your good here in this world. I may not recognize it, I may not see it, but it's for my good. You know, about 20 years ago, when it was a little bit of a different world, I used to tell guys, if you want to learn Musar, read People magazine. Bizman Hazeh, I can no longer say it, but the reason why I used to say it then was because People magazine was a very classic example of the rich and the famous. And you open up page after page of the rich, famous lifestyles, and you see misery. Every one of those stars and superstars are miserable. Besides the 99.9%, and that's the real statistic, 99.9% divorce rate in Hollywood on first marriages. Want to take a guess on second and third? How about fourth? Besides that, by the way, it is uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable when you're with your sixth wife and your Sally, Jane, I forget which one are you again. You know, it's not like Shalom Bayisi. But I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about the whole gamut of a miserable lifestyle. But they got everything. They got the money. They got the fame. And here's the irony. Because I taught high school for so many years, of course, when I make that speech, the guy says, yeah, but Rebbe, I'd be different. Just give me the money. Give me the fame. I'd be different. He gets the money, he gets the fame, and he's divorced in 2 years. Why? Because money, fame changes a person. And if you ever sit there and wonder, why is it I started this business and it's so great, that should be making so much money, why isn't Hashem giving me a bracha? All I ask for is a couple of million, and it's for good purposes. I'm going to give staka, and I'm going to do what's right. If you could have handled it, you would have gotten it. And a person has to understand that what I wish for, what I desire, is not necessarily for my good. And Hashem, like the wise parent, often knows and understands much better than we what I need, what's in my best interest. And a person has to have this attitude. A person has to stop and think and has to say, Hashem knows what's for my good, and Hashem loves me more than I love me. And that attitude has to be margul b'fume, has to be natural, right off the tip of the tongue. Because when you start using it, you start seeing things in those lights. Long ago, I ceased being afraid of roller coasters. Not because I'm particularly brave, but because I'm a hardened capitalist. And it is my sincere belief that if Six Flags has millions and millions of dollars to lose by a single fatality, they're going to be very careful to make sure that that roller coaster remains on the track and doesn't fall off the track. So I can get on a roller coaster, my kids challenge me, come on this one doesn't scare me. I get on knowing full well, I put that seatbelt on, I know I'll be back here in 30 seconds, 60 seconds, well and healthy. Unfortunately though, they discovered a new way to torture fathers. It's called virtual reality roller coasters. So of course my children decide that Abba needs a little bit of torture. And we got to get into one of these virtual reality roller coasters. Now here, you see there's nothing, there's no hold bars here. You see, because you're in this capsule, you ever seen them, and basically some meshugana gets to write the program, and he can shake you up and down all around, and Hashem Yirachem. But it's not just that they get to shake you and flip you and troll you. they got to make it real. So on the screen, coming at you. And of course, it's got to be like a seven-head dragon that looks real. But worse than that, they blow the air. So you feel the rush. This is so real. Now, when they find, and by the way, it also, you know, any real roller coaster lasts 30 seconds, maximum 60 seconds. This ride is 5 minutes. Jim, you're right. It was rough. I did it once. I will not do it another time. But I believe that there actually is a lesson to learn from virtual reality roller coasters. And you know what that lesson is? It's a bluff. It's a fake. All the shaking, all the twisting, it's just a fake. It's just a bluff. It's not real. And if you're not really certain, close your eyes. And you see, there's no track, there's no movement, it's just a screen, it's just a fake. And my friends, I believe that that is a very apt mushal for life. There are many, many times when it seems very scary, all types of bad things, whether you can't pay the mortgage or you're sick or who knows what. And at a certain point, you have to close your eyes and say, okay, there's a Borei Olam who created the world, who runs the world, and I'm not scared. I'm not scared because I'm not alone. This roller coaster ride is controlled. It's run. The programmer is not some mischievous punk who wants to shake me up and make me sick. It's run by Hashem. There's a plan. There's a purpose. And now, here's an amazing line the Chovos Havavos says. In the Shar Cheshbon Nefesh, Shar 27, Chovos Havavos says, Avraham Avinu lived through 10 Nisyonos. Do you know, he says, that if he wasn't happy, if he wasn't besimcha, we would not be discussing those nishonos today. If Avraham Avinu had lived through all 10 nishonos, but wasn't shalem, wasn't happy, wasn't besimcha, we would not be discussing it, because the schar is not for living through it. The schar is for trusting in Hashem. The schar is for believing in Hashem, not being scared by the big boogeyman, by the shaking roller coasters, by the images, but trusting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I believe that there is a follow-up mushal. In the virtual roller coasters, I don't know if you know this, but occasionally they have people who are clever and they decide to put cameras in to take pictures of the scared occupants and sell it afterwards. Now, why anybody would want to buy a picture and go, for $5. But bottom line is, if you can imagine that you're in the roller coaster and they take the picture, and if your face looks like this, you failed. That's the mushal of life. You see, when you're going through life and you don't know how things are going to turn out, and you don't know what's going to be, if in your heart there's fear, trepidation, and you feel alone, you're failing that nisayon. Because whether it's for your good, whether it's a punishment, whether it's a test, at the end of the day, you will be judged. You'll be judged by how you reacted. Were you happy? Were you boteach? Were you besimcha? Or did you get scared by that false bluff? And my friends, it takes a lifetime to work on this stuff. And I have a little chiddush to tell you. Would you like to know what Hashem is busy with? One of the things that Hashem is busy with is your growth. Hashem is creating all types of difficult tasks, all types of imaginative situations for one purpose, for you to grow. Much like that programmer who's writing the virtual reality roller coaster program, Hashem writes a script for your life. Hashem takes you through it for one purpose, to give you the chance to withstand, to give you the chance to grow. And life brings many, many different various situations. And when you get really good at one, and you really mastered it, lo and behold, the screen changes. It's a whole new dragon that you have to slay. And it doesn't look like the previous one. And now you're ready for the next challenge. And ultimately, the way you win is by trusting in Hashem, doing what you're supposed to do, and understanding that Hashem has a plan, Hashem has created you, and Hashem protects you and guide you through your life. My friends, this is one of the most difficult contradictions for a person to live with. I am responsible, yet it's Hashem's world. And when it comes into play is when you're sick, it's easy. When you're sick because you're overweight, you smoke, your stress level hits the roof, and you know why you're sick. But what about when it's your spouse who has the exact sequence, all of those symptoms? And you spoke to her, and you did what you could, and you tried to help, and you spoke to her, and you tried this diet, and you tried that, and going to Telfin, it doesn't help. Gentlemen, that's a very different life's test, because it's not your responsibility. You tried, you did your best. And it's at that point that a person has to trust in Hashem and know Hashem has a plan, Hashem knows what's my best, and a person has to learn to be boteach in Hashem. I believe that's exactly what this Mishnah is saying. A person has to be besimcha. That doesn't mean when a person gets the bad news that his business went bankrupt, he's dancing a jig. You're not happy. It's bad news. You make a dina emes. But you make that dina emes with the following kavana. Hashem is the master. Hashem has decreed this. This is not perchance. It's not a happenstance. And it's for my good. Most likely for my good in this world. Most likely somewhere down the line I'll recognize it and I'll understand it. And that brings a person to a sense of being settled, a sense of comfort, a type of simcha. And I believe that's what the Mishnah is saying. But at the end of the day, a person can't be complacent, and a person cannot blame Hashem for his problems. My problems are my problem. My parnasa I have to be serious about. My health I have to be serious about. Shidduchim for my children I have to be serious about. I have to do my shtadlis with total, total devotion to it. But I also have to know that when things are outside of my realm, outside of my control, that's Hashem's plan, and Hashem loves me more than I love me. Hashem knows what's good for me, and Hashem has my best interest in heart, even when I don't understand it, and even when I can't relate to it. Someone asked me, where do you get the trivia facts for the Shmooz? Not all of them are trivia. Some come from the inside of Snapple caps, but much of it is through a lot of reading. But every once in a while I get a nace, and Yaakov Kreindler was my recent nace. He brought me an interesting fact, which I looked up and found it to be absolutely accurate. Here goes. Most insects, almost all insects, are cold-blooded. And what that means basically is they have no way to regulate their own body temperature. The bee, as well, is a cold-blooded animal. However, interestingly enough, the bee is able to control the temperature in the hive. Typically, the larva can only develop at a very specific temperature, somewhere around 96 degrees. And the bees are able to maintain the temperature within that hive at 96 degrees, despite it being much, much colder outside. How do they do that? They're apparently able to disengage their wings and flap their flight muscles in such a way that the shivering motion generates heat. And there'll be worker bees, hundreds and hundreds of worker bees, that will maintain exactly the right temperature in that hive of 96 degrees. Now that is an amazing feat, because if you've ever given an IQ test to a bee, you'll see they don't do very well. How they know that the larva needs 96, how they know to stop. Remember, hundreds of bees. It's a group effort over here. If it gets too hot, the larva die. Okay. The amazing fact is that most bees have a form of defense, namely a stinger. There are some bees, particularly a Japanese version of the bee, that has a very small stinger and has almost no defense from its natural predator, which is a large wasp. Typically, the large wasp will wait outside such a bee's nest, and what it would do is effectively destroy all of the workers' bees. As a matter of fact, bees similar to the Japanese bee will be destroyed by one wasp. The wasp waits outside the nest, and worker bee after worker bee after worker bee, one biologist watched and waited as 6,000 bees were destroyed by one wasp. However, the Japanese bee is never affected by that wasp that way. What happens is the wasp, which is much, much larger than the bee, comes to the hive. It begins emitting a certain smell. When the worker bees smell that, about 100 of them come out of the hive and they sort of lure the wasp into the hive. The wasp, assuming he's going to have easy prey, he's going for the larva that he's going to eat. He assumes he's going to easily get that. He follows the bees in. At that point, he's immediately swallowed up in a ball of 500 bees, and they begin flapping their wings with the wings disengaged. And the heat starts rising. Amazingly, at 115 degrees, the wasp dies, but the fatality, the heat that will kill the bees, is 125 degrees. They never get that high. They only stop. 500 of them surround this wasp, heat it up to 115. The wasp dies. They fly away. Now, if you would like to grow an emuna, this is a pretty good... You tell me that one evolved, yeah. Shkaya, 500, yeah, they know not to do too hot. By the way, if a couple of bees, you know, if they get too hot, they die, right? They don't die. Despite the fact that 500 in unison, they somehow manage to get the exact temperature and then stop. But that's not what I want to focus on. Gentlemen, do you understand what this means? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in balance. Hashem created natural predators, and Hashem created natural defense mechanisms. And every animal in the wild has a predator and has a defense system, whether it's camouflage, whether it's fangs, whether it's teeth, whether it's talons. And that little bee was given its defense mechanism. And what that means is that Hashem runs this world with very great detail, with tremendous wisdom, with tremendous cheshbon. And if Hashem does that for a little bee, you better understand that Hashem does that for Adam. And what that means is the next time you have a test that you know you can't withstand, this is it, I'm well beyond my ability to withstand it, know and understand that Hashem created that test, but gave you the defense, gave you the ability to withstand it, because if you didn't have the capacity to rise up against that, Hashem never would have tested you with it. In any life situation, any event that befalls you, when you're ready to throw up your hands and say, I quit, I can't take it, Hashem, it's too hard, know and understand that Hashem gave you that. Hashem gave you the ability to withstand. You have to stand strong. Be boteach b'Hashem. Know that Hashem understands your needs. And know that Hashem loves you. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant us the wisdom and the ability to put these concepts into practice.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all The Shmoozing free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.